Oh man, it's 6 p.m. and that means it's time for the bullpen, starring the one and only Joe George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
Listen and be fascinated as the longtime producer becomes untethered by lesser talent and can truly talk sports the way he was meant to, with no reins or restrictions, with stellar takes and perfect diction.
I'm assistant regional manager. I should know first.
Assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, okay.
Now, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen with Joe George.
Welcome into the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George here with you until 7 o'clock alongside Abigail, who's been with me most nights this week. We got a bunch of stuff to get into. Michael Connor will join the show coming up at 6:30. He was once upon a time an Astros insider when we previously worked together. So we're going to talk about Jose Altuve's new deal. That's pretty much what we're going to talk about the entire show today. So how do you guys feel? 713-780-3776 is your way into the show, and on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, and the YouTube channel, just look for ESPN Houston. We are live there as well going forward. But, you know, Jose Altuve, the news broke yesterday when I was on with Joel during the Killer Bees. We spent the whole, like, first 45 minutes of yesterday's show talking about Altuve's contract, why it hasn't been done, where we're at, like what is just next for this team, for this player, and what it means long-term. And then we got Jerome Solomon, had an interview with Jim Crane, which was published in the Chronicle, and the tone of the interview was definitely one of, hey, this thing's getting done. And then, like, I don't know, maybe we all should have just thought about this, that today was February 7th, 2-7. I guess, I don't know, I never would have thought about it, but they had the whole plaque ready to make it Jose Altuve Day, February 7th of every single year. So that to me is like was my first sign when I saw that this morning. Like, okay, this thing's been done. Honestly, I'm not even sure that when Dana Brown at FanFest said they hadn't had any discussions about Jose Altuve's contract, if he wasn't just straight up lying to us. If he wasn't just lying and trying to make it seem like nothing was going to be done so that way on February 7th, on 2-7, they could have this giant big thing and for Jose Altuve, present him with, you know, it's a Jose Altuve, all that stuff. So I don't know. I don't know what to think. What I do think is that it's an incredible deal for the Houston Astros. And, you know, Paul from Westview called earlier into the Killer Bees and kind of brought up the point this is kind of anti-Astros for what they've done. And I totally get that. But my thing with Jose Altuve in this contract, I kind of referenced this yesterday with Joel, and like he is in a different conversation than pretty much every single player in sports. Like, there is not a player on the Texans now. It should have been J.J. Watt, but the franchise was just such a disaster that he didn't want to be here anymore. There's no one now or really recently on the Rockets that deserves this kind of treatment. The argument for sure, Hakeem Olajuwon would have been one. J.J. Watt would have been one. But this falls into like what you have with Miguel Cabrera and Kobe Bryant are kind of the two examples that I use. That like with Miguel Cabrera, you knew that he was going to be a Detroit Tiger for the rest of his career. That he was chasing 3,000 hits just like Jose Altuve will be doing, chasing 3,000 hits. And it would be a shame for him to be elsewhere. I think what's interesting, too, about this comparison and you know, looking at Cabrera versus Altuve, the franchises were kind of similar at one point. Like, you had all these elite players on your roster. Like, if you think back to when they went to the World Series, I think they had four players in their rotation or on their roster that ended up winning Cy Youngs elsewhere. Verlander, Scherzer, Rick Porcello was one of them. I think there was one more even that, like, there was great success from this Tigers team in like the mid-2000s with Cabrera that went to, I think they went to a World Series, or at least like they had deep playoff success. And eventually, you know, the problem became is that they started trading all these guys and the franchise fell apart. Like, they became the miserable Tigers that we have all seen over the last couple years in baseball. But they had Miguel Cabrera, not just to sell tickets, but it was what he meant to the franchise as a whole. It made sense for him to finish his career there. Kobe Bryant, an incredible player, one of the best basketball players of all time. For me, he's number three. But like when the Lakers signed him to his last contract, he was not going to be a good basketball player for the remainder of that deal. That was very obvious. Like, it was clearly going down. The roster was littered with lottery picks. Like, that's when you had D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle and Brandon Ingram. They're on this roster with Kobe Bryant, in which they're not capable of winning basketball games. But the Lakers made the decision in that moment that they were going to keep Kobe a Laker, and they were going to overpay him for what his worth was. The Astros, they potentially did the same thing with Jose Altuve. Like, Jim Crane's talking about winning consistently and trying to keep winning moving forward, and that the window's not going to close for this team. But if it does close at some point, I do think it's a very positive thing that Jose Altuve will be, as the Astros said on Twitter, an Astro for life. Like that does matter, that even if things go poorly, I think players like Altuve should be rewarded with lifetime contract deals. I'm all for, you pay a player for what you think he's going to do. The Astros did not pay Josh Hader just for what he's done recently. They're paying Josh Hader because they expect him to create the best 7-8-9 in baseball by teaming up with Ryan Pressly and with Brian Abreu. So, like, you expect him over the duration of Josh Hader's contract to be one of the best closers or best bullpen pitchers in all of the game. I don't think you're doing that with Jose Altuve. Part of the way is, like, I think that gets very clear, even the way the contract is structured, that the last 2 years of his deal will only be $10 million. Like, that's almost even another sign of where, hey, we don't expect you, Jose, to be there and be at this level all the time. There was a press conference today, so let's hear some audio from that press conference today. First, we'll go to Dana Brown. Here is Dana Brown talking about Jose Altuve and being an Astro for life.
Jose Altuve is a special human being. Jose Altuve is the heartbeat of this organization. He's a franchise player. He's on pace to be in the Hall of Fame. He's a fan favorite. And without a doubt, he's the spark to our clubhouse, to our dugout, and he's an Astro for life. With that said, I want to announce a 5-year extension to his contract on top of 2024, and this commitment to him and his family will make them Astros for life. We are honored to have this man as one of our better players that we've ever seen in Houston. And congratulations to Jose Altuve for spending his entire career in Houston.
Okay. There's one part about this that I'm kind of fascinated by what Dana Brown just said there. And it goes with chasing 3,000, if that matters to Jose Altuve. It sure sounds like Jose Altuve has made it very clear he is not playing baseball in 2030. That, like, that when it is 2030 on the calendar, that he will not be on this team or any team. Just the way they're talking about Astro for life, I think it's clear in Jose Altuve's life plans that he's going to finish his career in baseball at the end of the 2029 season. So chasing 3,000 has to come in the next, you know, couple seasons. Like, there's not going to be that Miguel Cabrera push. Now, if he's really close, like if he's 10, 15 hits away, I could see that tone changing. But at least the way they're talking about it right now, it sure feels like there has been a serious conversation about Jose Altuve, and let's make it this long. This is how long I'm going to play, and I'm going to retire an Astro at the end of the 2029 season. Here is Jose Altuve, also from the press conference today, talking about even the idea of leaving and why it was best case to stay here.
My wife and I have a lot of conversations about if we're going to go somewhere else, if we're going to stay here, and I think, you know, the best case scenario was always here. You know, I come back every day after the night game and I see my daughter sleeping. I can wake up the next day and take him to school. So that was kind of like the conversation where everything started, and we decided to stay here in Houston, that we will never move from here.
And look, and that's where that's another, you know, it's like a big picture, small picture thing. Like with Jose Altuve, is like he's not moving his family, and that does factor in. Like, there are a lot of players, specifically in this city, which I've always kind of found interesting, that have left Houston, and they still at this moment live here, even though they're no longer playing for a team in the city. But I think this is an incredible deal, not just for the Astros, but for Jose Altuve. Like, he gets his money, that's obviously very well deserved. At the same time, he did the Houston Astros a huge favor by taking less than what I viewed and what multiple people have viewed the market value would have been if he hit free agency, the Yankees might have gone at $200 million just to spite the Astros, honestly. So I think this is fantastic. You know, and at the end of the day, I think all that really matters, besides the fact that he will end his career here, is I do believe the Astros will win another World Series during the duration of this extension with Jose Altuve. They could win it this year. That'd be awesome. But I still think that after the 2024 season, there is one more World Series left in this team. And I've always kind of had this philosophy about contracts. It's like, well, is it a bad deal if the last 2 years are good? Well, tell me what happened in the first 3 years of the deal. If they win a World Series and you guarantee to keep Jose Altuve here in 2026, honestly, like, I don't really care. Like, yes, it might hurt you down the road and make things more challenging, but you kept Jose Altuve in Houston, and if you win another World Series, it's always worth it. Even with trades, like, you know, Drew Gilbert could go on and be a multiple-time All-Star. If the Houston Astros win a World Series with Justin Verlander on this team, I don't care. Like, I do not care if Drew Gilbert for the next 15 years is a great player, but if you win another World Series with Justin Verlander, hell, even get to another World Series with Justin Verlander on this roster, I'm all for that trade. So to me, winning is what matters the most. And if, yeah, things get bad on the end, that's fine. But one of the challenges with winning over the lifetime on this contract is there are some big, big name potential free agents on this roster. Fromber, Bregman, Tucker, and there'll be more. We talk about it next year. Who stays? Who goes? And Dana Brown admits it costs money to win baseball games. That's next year on The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George here with you till 7 o'clock. We'll have Michael Connor joining us in about 14 minutes from now. Get his take on what's going on with the Altuve contract, what it means for the Astros in the short term, the long term, as well as some of the other guys that are coming up in free agency over the next two seasons. So, obviously, the most pressing one here is Alex Bregman. Now, we know from Granato that Alex Bregman has bought and built a house in Arizona. We know that, you know, Jim Crane, in his interview with Jerome Solomon yesterday in the Chronicle, he did say that, you know, they will offer an extension to Alex Bregman. It is not a promise of an extension, but at least there will be an offer. Now, it might not be a good offer, at least according to Scott Boras and Alex Bregman, but one will at least exist. Now, it does scream like, hey, we tried our best, but like he's leaving us and going somewhere else for a lot more money. That's what it sounds like to me. I'll be honest. I'm okay with that. Like, I like Alex Bregman, the player. I think he's really good, but I do think that, like, if he gets to, you know, $30 million, it's going to be pushing it for what his contract would be and for the quality of play. You know, the other thing, too, about, I think, the conversation with this, and look, I'm going to be a little negative Nancy here about the Altuve stuff, and one of the things I want to one of the things I need to talk to Michael about is the one problem with Jose Altuve's contract that I think becomes an issue for this team, like when you look at Miguel Cabrera, is that at one point Miguel Cabrera could not play in the infield. He could not be a first baseman, and he was only a DH. The problem with the Houston Astros and Jose Altuve's contract is that if at some point Jose Altuve cannot play second base, what the hell are you doing with him? Because none of us want Yordan Alvarez in left field every single day. No one wants to see Yordan Alvarez out there all the time. And I think the logic in all of us would say at some point Yordan Alvarez will exclusively be a DH. So you can't have two players on your roster that can only be DH. Now, second base isn't like the most stressful position, I don't think, on a body and things like that. So hopefully you can avoid those issues for most of it, because hopefully Yordan Alvarez will be an Astro for all the time that Jose Altuve is. But it could be an issue at some point down the road. Not to be super negative about it, but it is one there. But could you have potentially three guys like Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, and Yordan Alvarez who are getting up there in age and they all need to be a DH? Like, it's just the one flaw, I think, in the positioning of this lineup and this roster in 5 years or 4 years with Jose Altuve, is if for some reason his body doesn't hold up, I think it just puts you in some potential tough situations that hopefully you can avoid, and hopefully Altuve can play second base forever, or Yordan can learn how to play first base or something like that. But, like, it's just something that could come up down the road. I'm fine with Alex Bregman walking. Framber Valdez, I'm also good with it. Like, I'm on the record. Like, just to me, someone that seems as, I feel like mentally weak is harsh, but it sure as hell seems like that when Dusty Baker did not let him start the All-Star game last year, that things unraveled. I know he threw a no-hitter the night that they acquired Justin Verlander, but it sure seems like everything after that was a total, total disaster. And I'm just not sure that's someone that, like, I would want to give Cy Young money to, that he, on the field when he does pitch well, he so clearly deserves, but I'm just not sure that I want to be the team that gives him the contract. Now, the big one is in 2 years, it is Kyle Tucker. Like, Kyle Tucker, to me, can be the best baseball player on this team. He is, like, the definition of a five-tool player. He's good on the bases. He's great in the field. Like, he has a great bat. I know he's not as consistent as everyone would like him to be, but I would like Kyle Tucker to be here for a long-term contract. I would like to see Jim Crane do this once again and keep Kyle Tucker here and make him the exception of the rule to Correa and Springer and then Alex Bregman. Like, that to me is where Tucker's situation is much more similar to those guys than it was Jose Altuve's. But let's hear from Dana Brown. Dana Brown stated the obvious today also at the press conference, and he said it costs money to win baseball games.
No, I mean, I say it costs to be good. And so these players that we're bringing in, it's pretty special. You know, Hader is pretty special. And, of course, extending Altuve and having him in this organization, that's pretty special. And so when you want to keep the core group together and you want to continue to win, you know, you have to make these type of decisions. And, you know, we have the fan base to support us. You know, we have an owner in Jim Crane who's very dedicated to winning. And so we're going to do whatever we can do to keep this thing going.
And what I'm curious when they say that, like, there was a little discussion there at the end of the Killer Bees about, you know, like, how do you keep it going? Like, what does that look like? What model of the Astros is the most sustainable? Now, what they've done with Altuve and Hader, like, I agree with, like, what Joel and Jeremy and the caller Paul earlier were saying, that it's not sustainable to consistently be giving out these contracts. But these contracts also are kind of unreasonable. Like, paying Manny Machado like the Padres did, like, they just gave him an 11-year deal for $435 million. It's going to pay him $35 million when he's 40 years old. That's not sustainable. Altuve is getting 10. Like, that is sustainable. That's a great contract. You can go into free agency and find players that will take deals similar to that, where it's two, three, four years, something like that, and where maybe on the back end it's a little bit cheaper. And I think that's fair to, you know, where it's absolutely fair to pay someone up front with the expectation that they're going to be not good on the back end. Like, that's all good with me. The other part of this, like, when they talk about, you know, building and keeping a winner that we also talked about a lot on the Bees, was that Dana Brown has to be good at his job. Like, the idea that the Astros window is going to stay open throughout this contract, while I like the core that they have more question marks than they have answers. You know, if Fromber's walking, you have five question marks in your rotation. Like, Justin Verlander is a question mark. With at his age, the velocity dip, like, who is he really going to be the next 2 years as an Astro? Who is Christian Javier? Like, Christian Javier, is he the guy throwing no-hitters in the World Series? Or is he the guy that, frankly, to me, looked a little bit overweight last year and really didn't pitch that well for most of the season? Who is Luis Garcia coming off the injury? I don't believe in Jose Urquidy as a long-term piece. Hunter Brown, could he be the next Justin Verlander? Could Keith Law, who said he'd be best served in the bullpen, be right about Hunter Brown's career? Like, those are the questions you have. And then there's this Lance McCullers guy who, like, I have no idea what he's going to be. But that's where, like, there's more, I just have more questions about this team. And where Dana Brown, like, if he wants to build and sustain being a winner, I think everyone's right. We're like, you can't just keep handing out contracts, but you have to develop players. Like, you have to find answers. I'm curious if Dana Brown is speaking the truth about Spencer Arrighetti, that he does believe Spencer Arrighetti is a big-time prospect for this team. That would be huge. Like that would be a massive win for this franchise if that Spencer Arrighetti comes up to the Astros this year, whether it's due to injury or moving to a six-man rotation or even early on the season, just wins a job in spring training, and he can come in and make an impact right away. That would be massive. Like, if you can, like, that's the thing about the Astros, too. Like, when we talk about their window, I see the doomsday scenario that everyone sees, that, like, these guys aren't good, that Presley doesn't come back, that your bullpen's not really strong and young, it's a little bit older and inconsistent for the most part, and that you're not going to replace most of these guys when they hit free agency. But I see on the positive side, too, that if at least some of these guys hit, you're going to be good. 9339, so I'm assuming this is about the Astros as a whole. Last 2 years, offense has been garbage. It hasn't been great. I mean, look, even when the year when they won the World Series, to this Texas point, I tend to agree. Like, it was not this great offense that led them to a World Series, but you have the pieces still. You have Kyle Tucker. You have Yordan Alvarez. I do expect Yainer Diaz to be a big-time offensive weapon for this team. Chaz McCormick, can he be what he was last year and just take a slight step back? Yeah. They've also removed their biggest excuse, which, like, I'm glad they did. I guess I'm curious to see if last year was all just nonsense and complaining. But, like, is there any chance the batter's eye actually affected the Astros as much as they complained about it? It's going to be fixed. We know that. They tried to fix it in the postseason. Didn't work. They couldn't hit it home. Like, could it actually fix this team this year? Maybe. Like, I agree the offense hasn't been good, but they have to find a way to figure out that, because it is a huge part of it. Like, while I like the pieces, I don't think the offense has been what you wanted it to be. And you have some gaping holes. You have Jose Abreu, who, like, he's another question mark for if they're going to win a World Series in the next 2 years. Like, who is that guy? Is he first half of the year Jose Abreu and the back injury was real and the second half of the season was much better? We'll see. I kind of lean that way, to be honest, just looking at the Astros season as we get closer. Not that he's going to be, I know, fraudulent MVP. You can't call it a fraudulent World Series for the Dodgers and not address Jose Abreu's MVP about 2020. But, like, he still can be a very good player. 9339 also said Houston only went to the World Series once before Altuve. He has been here for all the others. Win or lose, no complaining, no scandals, class. Many players could learn from him. Agreed. One other thing about Jose Altuve before we go to break and have Michael Connor join us. The Hall of Fame stuff. I do think Jose Altuve will get into the Hall of Fame. You know, we were even discussing it there on the Bees about, like, would the writers keep him out the first year and then let him in the second year? I'm going to be honest. I lean no to that. While, like, Beltran's numbers have gone up from year one to year two, so it seems like they're ignoring the sign-stealing scandal with him, I don't think they will with Jose Altuve. I hope I'm wrong, but I do think Jose Altuve is going to be closer to, like, Wagner in terms of waiting to get into the Hall of Fame than he will be Ken Griffey Jr. getting into in the first year. Like, I just think it's going to be a lot harder, and I think a lot of these writers are going to hold more against the Astros, and specifically the way people in the front office treated the media. Like, I think the Evandrelic stuff, as dumb as it sounds, the fact that they tried to get him fired from the Houston Chronicle, I think that's going to matter, and Jose Altuve will potentially be the poster child to hold him out of the Hall of Fame because of that. All right, it is the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We'll revisit some of this stuff next with Michael Connor, co-host of Connor and Beard, here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Deep inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios, there is a bullpen, and in that bullpen is the brilliant mind of Joe George. Call him now and challenge him in a battle of wits.
The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George here with you until 7 o'clock. Tomorrow from 12 to 6, maybe 12 to 7, we'll be live at the Decoy. We are figuring that out right now. So if you want to hang out with Barry Laminack and Jerome Solomon, that possibly will be happening from 6 to 7 tomorrow, because Barry Laminack will be filling in for Jeremy Branham. But at 12, at 2, when the Decoy opens, you can go hang out at the Decoy with this guy, Michael Connor. Michael, will you buy people beer tomorrow? You can say no. It's okay.
Yeah, no. It's not. When's the 15th?
Next week.
Yeah, so that's a no.
Well, we will be there next week on the 15th, too, so you might be careful about how you choose your words here.
No, well, maybe next week on the 15th I'll buy somebody a beer. How about that?
I think that's fair. First person to come up to you next week when we're at the decoy and say, Josh Beard is fat, gets a free beer from Michael.
Why are you going to go do Josh like that?
Well, I was going to have him come up to you and say I love gingers, but I felt like I would put the hate towards Josh instead of you in this moment. But
you're just trying to create chaos on the show. I see what you're doing.
That's what I do. I create chaos. All right. So Jose Altuve signed his new deal. I was on the air yesterday with Joel when it happened. We had that article with Jim Crane, you know, the interview he did with Jerome Solomon before, like came out like an hour and a half before the deal got reported and by the Astros and multiple people. How surprised were you yesterday, just going back to there, that this actually got done? What seems like this quickly, even though it also seems like it was well planned with today being 2-7 day and now Jose Altuve day.
Yeah, they're definitely playing it close to the vest here, telling us all this crap that they weren't talking or whatever, and then they just magically popped it down on 2-7. That was, you know, that was not planned one bit. But I guess I was more surprised that it got done before spring training. I just figured it'd be at spring training, like most of these things that get done, like the last time that they did it with them. You do it there, you have the big press conference in West Palm Beach, and then, yeah, that's the way you do it. But I'm glad it happened, obviously. Let's get it over with now. Let's start that. Who can you get to sign a contract next? Which is probably going to be nobody.
Yeah, let's go through that, because I just was doing that in the last segment. And, like, I am at the point now where I'm expecting Bregman to walk. I do not want Fromber to be extended. I'm still hopeful that they will find a way to keep Kyle Tucker. So we'll start with Bregman. I know, you know, Jim Crane, he made it clear there will at least be an extension offer. I think we all know what that means. It's more like a attaboy, we tried kind of a thing. Percentage out of 100. Alex Bregman is an Astro in 2025. For you is what?
I'll stick with his jersey number, 2%.
Oh, that's low, Michael.
I mean, I just, like you said, we've seen, look at even the history here with Altuve. There is a There's a precedent set. The furthest Jim Crane has ever offered is 6 years. You go to Alex Bregman like they did with Carlos Correa and offer him six for, I forget what the highest number was on Correa when they did that, but I think it was around like $30 million. You offer him that, guess what Bregman's doing? He's saying no. He's saying, I appreciate the offer, but we're not doing that. I think I told you that story before. It was when we were in spring training last year, and he and I were talking about something away from everything, and all the crazy money that was going around, and he mentioned the jersey patch on the, we were talking about the jersey patch when they had the Occidental Petroleum on the sleeve, and he was mentioning like who could be the sponsor next year. I go, oh, you could pay for something with your new $300 million contract. And he just gave me that look of, you know, that sly dog look, and then walked away. I was like, we know what he's looking for. He's looking for, I think the lowest, or there's like five guys or something at third base right now. They've got a contract of like $210 million minimum. He's looking for 250 at least. That's what I guarantee it takes.
Do you feel like there's anything to the Arizona stuff? Like, do you have, like, gut feel where he ends up? You know, is he a Diamondback? Is he spit in the face of the Astros and go to the Yankees? Like, any gut feel way too early predictions on where Alex Bregman signs?
Since he's moved to Arizona, pick an Arizona spring training team. How about you've brought it up to me before. How about the Cubs?
Yeah, Joe? I think he's a Cub. I'll be honest. I 100% think he's going to be a Cub. Even though, I mean, to be fair, as was pointed out to me yesterday by someone, they, like the Astros, have actually never completed a long-term deal with a Scott Boras client. That's why they're not going to get Cody Bellinger back. So maybe not. Like, maybe he won't be a Cub, because that seems to be a huge problem for them.
Well, maybe not. But I just think that he'll find a team that, and this is the sad, like, does he go, that we were talking about this today, does he get stuck in like the Chris Bryant route? Like, is there a team out there that loves him? You know, the team that's not being talked about here possibly is the team that originally drafted him. What about Boston?
Yeah.
Boston's, you know, probably looking to get back into it. He'd actually fit really well in that ballpark. He'd fit well with that mentality there in Boston. Like, I could see him being a Red Sox.
Yeah, I think Boston makes a lot of sense for him, honestly. Like, it just, they're such a weird franchise, because, like, they talk a big game about, like, they say this, they've been saying the stuff that, like, Dana Brown and Jim Crane have been saying all offseason about winning and spending money. and then they don't do any of it. Like they're operating like a small market baseball team. Valdez. Okay, no, you go first.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, that, you know, I know you've got a third baseman and a shortstop right now. You could put Bregman at third base, I guess, and move Devers to first. It feels like it'd work.
Okay, so Framber Valdez, like I just don't believe that someone that has like kind of the track record that he does of not being able to keep it together and not being able to be super consistent, not because of physical issues, but more like head case issues, mentally weak issues. I don't want to give him a contract. Do you want them to sign Framber, or are you willing to let him walk because of what we've seen on the field?
No, I'd let him go. I think it'd be great if you were able to for a very team-friendly deal. Like, if you could get him for if you get him for, like, 5 for $100, I'd do it. But I don't think, like, I'd ever extend past $100. I think that there's, from everything I've heard some things in the past, there's still maturity issues away from the field that I think are even a bigger problem than the on-the-field stuff at times. Like, he's not perfect. And look, he's a human. We're all able to make mistakes and grow and whatever, and maybe he's fixing those things or whatnot. But I just don't think he's a guy that you invest in. The stuff-wise, yeah. I mean, that's a ace. That's a horse. He's so dependable. I would always prefer to have him around because he's good when he's good. But I just don't think that you can invest in him unless he comes out this year and blows your doors off and shows you something different and, you know, wins a Cy Young or something.
So if there's a 2% chance Bregman stays, is there a 30% chance that Kyle Tucker stays? Or are we going back to his original number and saying 3%?
I'm going to say, you know, I'll go to his number that he has now, 30%, because I just want to be optimistic. Like, I think we're seeing a little bit of a changing of the guard with Crane, clearly spending the money over the collective balance tax here and going big, and you've just signed another player. Like, I'm not going to do with the whole, like, it's time to buck the trend of I don't do long deals or whatever. You keep signing these guys that are in their 30s until they're basically 40. Altuve, Abreu, like, you can't keep signing. You've signed Yuli in the past, who's super old. Like,
yeah.
You can't sign old players and then be like, I don't want to give a 27-year-old a 10-year contract. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't. So I'm going to hold out some hope that he bucks a trend.
Yeah, that was like one of my issues with Tucker last year, when the idea of like, well, they don't give out 10-year contracts. Like, well, you just gave a 3-year contract to Jose Abreu, who's going to be really old by the time his contract ends. Like, why wouldn't you have last offseason just tried to find a way to give Kyle Tucker a 8, 9, 10-year contract, and then he would have ended his career with the Astros at the same point that Jose Abreu did. Or Jose Abreu will. So, yeah, I think 30% is fair. Like, I think there is a reason to be more optimistic now than there was before this offseason, just because we're seeing Jim Crane, like, spend money in a way that we didn't really expect him to. Like, I don't think they'll just let Alex Bregman walk and run Wagner's kid out there at third base in 2025. Like, I expect them to, if Bregman walks, to find someone competent to play third base next year.
I hope you're right. I haven't looked enough at the market, but like, you can't. There's some immeasurable things that you're going to lose here, and that's what keeps happening with these guys. You keep letting them walk, and I don't think that you can keep. If you really, you know, he has that quote, whatever, that Mark Berman tweeted out, that the window's always open when I'm here or whatever. Like, that's true, but you're going to have to keep some of these guys around, and whether it's Bregman or Tucker. And I know that people are like, well, look, they could do both. Like, if Jim Crane just said bleep it, they could afford both. I don't think that he's going to say bleep it and do that, but, like, they realistically could. And they'd pay for it down the road. They'd pay for it big time when they stink again. But that, to me, I'm at that point where I'm like, it's okay, it's whatever, just do it. But if it is one or the other, find a way to keep the Tucker one. You got to get it done this offseason, because I think if you don't do it this offseason, you're not getting it done before next season.
No, I definitely agree. I think this is like the kind of their last chance to get it done. You know, and the thing with, like, I guess, like, my only thing with the Crane quote about, like, we'll always be, you know, in contention or whatever it was, like, we'll always be in win now mode. You know, like, there are a lot of teams in baseball that have had great success over the last 15, 20 years where, like, they're at least above 500. I think that's kind of what Jim Crane is saying, in my view, is that, like, we're going to be competitive every single year going forward. We are never going to revert back to what it was to get all these players originally on the roster. Part of that definitely is Dana Brown and his ability to, you know, draft players. Because if they can't draft players, then they have no shot to keep this window open.
No, you're absolutely right. Their farm system's terrible.
Yeah, like, it's so early. Like, do you think Dana Brown can be that guy that can help alleviate some of this, like, Crane having to spend money all the time issues that this team will run into in the next couple of years?
Like, given his track record across baseball and drafts and organizations he's worked in, I mean, I'm gonna give him some time to work, see what it looks like. I think that's a smart idea. I mean, everybody says that for the large part, like, they've got guys running the draft still. They've got a lot of guys that are still around even from the Luno days that are running things that are, you know, have worked up through the organization throughout the years. So And they did trade away. The farm system doesn't look as great today because you could go back and say that was a mistake in the first place to let Verlander walk, even though you got him cheaper, but it cost you your two best prospects. Like, we're having a different conversation on the farm system if you didn't have to get rid of those two guys last year. And you're talking easier to replace things. But I think that, you know, Dana's got a chance to do it. Based off everybody, the way that they talk about him as an evaluator and the people that are running it, that they can figure it out.
Okay, I have a negative view of this Altuve deal. Do you have any besides the fact that he'll be old? One concern.
I mean, it's a lot of money, but I mean, not really. What's yours?
So my only concern is that if at some point he becomes Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols, where he can't play the field, I don't really understand how they're going to make this work in 2027 and 2028 with Jordan Alvarez, who also can't play the field.
Here's the issue with that comparison, right? Albert Pujols was probably 3 years older than he actually was and suffered from the worst plantar fasciitis ever and was fat. And then Miguel Cabrera was also fat. Do you really think Jose Altuve is going to blimp up at any point?
So you think it's a fat people problem is what you're saying? You're fat shaming.
It absolutely is a fat person problem. I mean, look, Biggio played a competent second base at 40 years old. I'm not one bit concerned about Altuve not being able to play second base for the rest of the
season. All right, so what Michael Connor is telling everyone right here is that as long as Jose Altuve doesn't eat too much Whataburger, he's going to be fine, and my concern is a nothing burger.
He's got a personal chef. He's going to be fine. They're going to keep him in check.
It's funny. I forgot how fat both those guys were. You didn't make me feel better just now, so thank you, Michael. Michael, you feel better tomorrow from 12 to 3.
Yeah, come on out and tell Josh he's fat, according to Joe. Joe said that.
That's next week. It's not this week. It's next week. If you go out to Decoy next week and say Josh is fat, Michael will buy you a beer. The first person only.
I hope Josh is listening right now.
He's probably not. He's not a good team player. He is sometimes.
That's okay.
All right, he is Michael Connor. You can find him on Twitter at MConnorRadio, co-host of Connor and Beard. They'll be live at the Decoy tomorrow from 12 to 3. Michael, thank you as always, and we'll talk soon.
See you later.
Okay, he is Michael Connor. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. Final segment of the Bullpen is next.
Deep inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios, there is a bullpen. And in that bullpen is the brilliant mind of Joe George. Call him now and challenge him in a battle of wits.
All right, final segment of the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Thank you to Michael Connor for joining us again. There's a debate going on the Twitch chat earlier about my tax advice. I didn't give tax advice. I just said the only reason why I'm getting money back on my taxes this year is because I have a child. And then some of these people are saying that I'm telling them to have kids so they can get more money back on their taxes. I do not encourage that. If it happens, good for you, but I don't encourage that. So I'm going to make that very clear. So tomorrow, during the Killer Bees, or right at the end of Connor and Beard, I can't remember exactly what time everything's going to shake out tomorrow because they've moved to the trade deadline a little bit, but tomorrow's the NBA trade deadline. Now, there's been like 3 or 4 or 5 trades that have happened today. Nothing big. Like, honestly, the biggest name that's been traded, it feels like so far, has been Steven Adams to the Rockets, but he obviously won't play this year for the team. But tomorrow's trade deadline day. And I'm trying to figure out, like, what's going to happen in the NBA. Honestly, this is one of those moments where I think we look back to what the trade deadline used to be in the NBA, that, you know, 4 or 5 years ago even, it was a lot more fun. We would see bigger names be moved. Honestly, at this point, I feel like the biggest name that's going to get traded tomorrow is, like, Bruce Brown. Like, he might get traded again this season. I just do not expect tomorrow's deadline to be major. Like, Zach LaVine could have been a big name. I don't think they're going to do that because, well, he's out for the season. DeMar DeRozan could be traded tomorrow. I don't think that's going to be one. Like, to me, it's just going to be a bunch of small moves. Like, the one name going into the year I was most curious about was going to be Kyrie Irving. The Lakers, like, very intelligently, and if I guess you could view it this way, I do, they basically gave D'Angelo Russell an overpaid contract that equaled exactly what Kyrie Irving was making this year, so that if they wanted to acquire Kyrie Irving at the deadline, they would have the contract they'd be able to attach as an asset to send to Dallas to make a move. But I don't expect it to be a big deadline. And specifically, I don't expect it to be a massive, massive deadline for the Rockets in terms of players that are coming in. I do not think the Rockets are going to be going out tomorrow and acquiring players that are going to help them win now. I think the Steven Adams trade was a clear sign that the Rockets know that this year is not win now. As Jeremy and I discussed on Monday when Jeremy was hanging out for the extra hour, was it feels like that report, that suggestion that Ime Udoka wants to speed up the process might be a little off. And like, the more I've thought about it and then post-Steven Adams trade, I feel like that coupled with the Jalen Green trade rumors, and my belief is that it's more of a signal to the league that he will be available this offseason. I think that's what that quote is really, or not that, not quote, but that rumor is really about. That the Rockets this coming offseason are going to hit the gas pedal and try to speed up their reboot. Going back to that introductory press conference for Udoka where, you know, Tillman Fertitta was talking about these phases of Rockets basketball and going into phase two of getting back to the playoffs and building that winning culture. I think you could argue they're kind of already in phase two, you know, the way that Tillman broke it down, that this season's about learning to win again. They've been losers for the last couple years. Even when that last year where James Harden started the season here, like, they're just a loser going nowhere franchise. They had a coach who did not develop players. This team did not care about winning. They cared about empty stats, and that's pretty much it. Like, they didn't put effort on defense. They're at a point now where, like, they're building towards something. They're building towards being relevant, to being a main topic of conversation. So I don't think they're going to be trading and bringing in guys that are going to accelerate that process right now. I think that's going to be the offseason. With all that being said, I do think the Rockets will, I would guess, make at least two trades tomorrow. I would say three. I do not expect Holiday and Jeff Green to be members of the Houston Rockets by the time the Killer Bee starts tomorrow. I think those are two veteran players that will be looked at by contenders that they can bring in cheap deals. You're talking probably second round picks, you know, getting some return of seconds that you gave up for Steven Adams. That's the kind of deal that we're talking about here. The biggest name that I would look at is Jayshon Tate. Jayshon Tate is the one player that I think you can get a little bit more of a return from. It's not necessarily a first round pick. It's not, you know, it's a young rotational player, hopefully. And then honestly, once again, it might just be more second round picks. Like, that seems to be what is going on in the NBA so far at the deadline. It is trading role players for a bunch of seconds. I would hope you can get more for Tate from a contending team in this moment, but we'll just kind of have to wait and see what's out there. But I would anticipate that tomorrow that the Rockets make at least two trades, and those are really the three players that I look at and I say, okay, they make the most sense for a Clippers, a Bucks, you know, a Celtics, like bringing those guys going to a new team and trying to help a team win a championship and just being extra depth to a roster. So that's what I'm expecting tomorrow. I do not expect Jalen Green to be traded. I do not expect them to try to make some flashy trade where a player like Bridges from the Nets would be coming in return. That, to me, is totally far-fetched, unrealistic, which almost makes me feel like it's going to happen. Like, because that's oftentimes how the NBA trade deadline works, is that you are surprised. It was the offseason, but I remember being so stunned when the Rockets acquired Russell Westbrook. So, like, you never know what's going to happen. I just do not expect it to be much. All right, that is going to do it for us today on the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Tomorrow at 6 o'clock, we'll have Game On. I will be back with a show on Friday coming up at 6. Of course, I'll be here tomorrow at 3 o'clock tomorrow with the Killer Beast, which will be Joel Blank and Barry Laminack. But coming up at 7:30 here on 97.5 and 92.5, we have Texas A&M versus Mizzou. That's next, and I will talk to you tomorrow.